الله من الشيطان الرجيم. ومن الناس من يشتري لهو الحديث ليضل عن سبيل الله بغير علم ويتخذها هزوا أولئك لهم عذاب مهين. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. أفمن هذا الحديث تعجبون وتضحكون ولا تبكون وأنتم سامدون. فاسجدوا لله واعبدوا.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. My name is Waleed Lang and I have been elected by acclamation, I might say, to introduce our guest speaker for this evening. His name is Muhammad Abdul Hakim Thomas. He was born in Belgium, but he was reared in New York, where he purchased the Quran at the age of 11 and accepted Islam 7 years later in 1985. He has an MA in Applied Linguistics and a BA in Music. He has participated in translations of Islamic publications from English to Mali, and has conducted several Islamic lectures both in the Kingdom and in the U.S. He is currently working as a lecturer at King Saud University in the English department in the Institute of Languages and Translation. Today's topic is thoughts on music and Islam. Thank you.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. And there are among men those who purchase idle talk in order to mislead others from Allah's path without knowledge, and who throw ridicule upon it. For such there will be a humiliating punishment. Do you marvel at this statement and laugh at those and laugh and do not weep while you amuse yourselves proudly in vanities? Rather prostrate before Allah and worship Him. The topic tonight are some thoughts on music in Islam. As my introducer mentioned, I have a lot of experience in that area and I've spent most of my life studying music very seriously. I want to begin by saying that music is, of course, everywhere. It's something that's part of being human. You find music in every society, all over the world. Just like you find marriage, or you find language, or you find folklore, or dancing. This is something that you find in all cultures. From Mecca to Mississippi, you'll find this. Music surrounds us everywhere, wherever we go. If we're on a bus, if we're on a train, walking around, television, of course, film. We find music is just everywhere. Now, Islam, of course, as we know, is a comprehensive religion dealing with all aspects of life, and music is no exception. Islam does talk about music and teaches us about music, just as it teaches us about marriage and folklore and the other things that I mentioned earlier, things that are part of being human. Islam is not silent about music, although some people say so. We find that there is some controversy, actually, among Muslims concerning music. And I can say from the outset that I'm not here to settle every controversy, simply because I'm not qualified to do so. However, I hope, inshallah, that I am qualified to give you nasiha as a Muslim, and as someone who has a little bit of experience in these matters. So inshallah, tonight I hope we can take a look at music in light of our religion, in light of Islam, and in light of some experience, both personal experience and experience of those in our society. As I mentioned before, I spent most of my life studying music. I started when I was about maybe this big, with the Suzuki method of violin, which is a method by which you give the person the instrument and just tell them to go and play. And then later on we'll develop into great musicians, supposedly. Later on I studied a piano and guitar and baritone and several instruments, and also music theory. Later on I went to the university. I attended this Indiana University School of Music, which is the largest music school in the United States, where I studied classical and jazz piano. Before that, though, I had a lot of experience playing music professionally and also teaching music. I taught piano for a long time to adults and to children, and also taught music theory. And I've had some very interesting experiences working as a musician. Now, we find in the West, as well as in the East, that many times the people who are involved in music tend to have a certain character. We find, for example, that people who are very, very serious about music sometimes tend to get a little bit arrogant about it. We find, for example, classical musicians will practice 8 hours a day, and they're very, very serious about it. So serious that they feel that people who don't do that are not real musicians, and they should not waste their time being around such people. We find also, a lot of the time, among musicians, we find things like drug abuse and other corruption. We find this also among people who are involved in other arts. A lot of the time, artists feel that they are a segment of society that do not need to follow the same rules as the rest of the society, that they are somehow special, and that they are on the cutting edge of the way the world should be. And they will reject the norms of the society, such as religion, for example, and such as other conventions. I found in my experience that that drugs particularly was a very, very, very large part of the music scene, not only with rock music and jazz music, but even with classical music. People become involved in drug abuse. We know, of course, that music is so powerful, and it affects emotions to such an extent that it can be, in fact, a substitution for spirituality. People become so involved in music, it becomes like a religion almost. And they have a spiritual experience brought about by both listening to music or playing the music. One of my experiences I had when I was a teenager, I was playing in a rock band. And we were hired to play at one particular club for a child's confirmation. A confirmation is something that's done in the Catholic Church, in which a young man or young woman, young man in this case, is confirmed as a Catholic. From this point on, he is considered an adult Catholic. And so we went to play the music at this confirmation, and the father of the child came to us, and he came to me in particular and said, "Listen, if you guys want to do anything, just go ahead and do it. If you want to do anything beforehand, go ahead." So we said, well, we thought it sounded kind of strange, but we said, yeah, okay. And then later he came back again, because we thought that maybe we didn't understand him. And he said, "Remember, I'm saying you could do anything you want beforehand, so that you'll play the music very well." And he said, okay. Finally he said, "Look, if you want to go and smoke some marijuana or take some other drugs, just go ahead and do it." Because his feeling was that if we were high and if we were under the influence of these drugs, that we would play very, very well. So we happened to have some drugs with us at the time. And he invited us to his van. He had a van there. And he said, "Just stay in here for a little while and do whatever you want." So naturally, we did what he asked. And we came back with our minds not really with us. And when we got back, we started playing the music, and at least we thought it was good. And we found that we had a tremendous effect on the people that were there, that they were ready to do anything that we told them to do. The lead singer, for example, told all these people, there was a large display at the area. He says, "You know, just take part of it and break it. Take one balloon and pop it." And the whole place was destroyed in a matter of seconds. It was incredible. So not only were we not quite with our senses, but the rest of the people there were not with their senses at all. Now, of course, there are two things operating here, both the drugs and the music, but they came together, and we find that oftentimes they come together. Later on, of course, we found out that the club were very angry at us for causing all this damage, and the boy's mother was very angry at us, even though the father was the one who wanted us to get so high in the first place. That's just one of many, many experiences. Oftentimes we found that when we were using drugs and playing the music, we thought we were just playing the best music that ever happened in the whole world. We'd be playing and say, wow, this is great. And then the next day, when we were no longer under the influence of the drug, we would listen to the tapes and say, wow, that's terrible. How did that ever happen? But of course, that was the effect of the drug. Now, I'd like to take a look now at some of the major music personalities in the world, particularly in the West. Of course, if I talk about rock and roll, everybody knows that these people are often involved in such activities. You find some music singers, for example, use so much drugs that they die of it. I can think of another one in particular who would have so much sex when he was out doing his concerts that he actually took out paternity insurance. So that in case a woman were to sue him and say, hey, I'm carrying your child, he'd say, hey, no problem. I have insurance. So there's nothing to worry about. This is true. For example, we find in America the personality of Elvis. Elvis is a singer who became so popular that he was almost worshipped. And I've heard one woman in particular talk about believing in Elvis after he had died. Some people, of course, claim that he never died. People collect relics of Elvis, just like they might try to collect a relic of Jesus Christ. This is a piece of the cross on which Jesus was crucified. They'll say, this is a piece of tile from the floor of Elvis's bathroom. This is true. This is a piece of Elvis's hair. And they will have auctions in which they sell these things for hundreds and hundreds of dollars, even thousands of dollars. A photograph I once saw of Elvis with his signature on got $500. Easily, from someone who wanted a piece of that. We find the much celebrated Beatles, for example, were drug addicts. John Lennon was a heroin addict. And although he's often remembered for talking about giving peace a chance, he was really into giving a peace a chance, P-I-E-C-E, and a piece of some sort of drug. And there are many, many others who found a similar fate. In the field of jazz music is an Afro-American art that came about in the 20th century. We find that just about all of the major figures were deeply involved in drugs and other corruptions. Jelly Roll Morton, he was the first great composer of jazz music. And he was a pimp. A pimp is somebody who sells a woman as a prostitute. This is his profession. He did music on the side. He was a hustler. He cheated people out of their money. And he was extraordinarily arrogant about his music. He claimed to have invented jazz on such and such a date and thought that nobody else was any good. And he is the father of jazz composition. Duke Ellington and Dizzy Gillespie, they were involved in the big band era, in which they would play music and people would dance, men and women dancing together. Just going crazy. Charlie Parker is another one who is celebrated as probably one of the greatest musical geniuses of jazz ever. And he died a heroin addict. Although he was considered a genius, he spent a lot of his time lying down in the gutter in the street and died like that. Coleman Hawkins was an alcoholic, another great jazz musician. John Coltrane also died a heroin addict. And, of course, Miles Davis, who died recently, he survived his drug addiction days, but died recently, after many years. Now, maybe you haven't heard these names before, but maybe some of you have, and you realize that these are the giant figures in jazz music, and they all ended up with that sort of end. In classical music, a lot of the time in the West, we think of the classical composers as being such lofty figures, very disciplined, very intelligent, geniuses. But we find that Mozart, for example, was an alcoholic, had all his girlfriends. He was sort of a party animal. He was also a mason, He belonged to the Masonic cult, and was deeply involved in that, and even wrote one opera involving the Muslim world, and Turkey in particular. We find that Beethoven, who again is celebrated as probably one of the greatest composers ever, was really a sort of a crazy man. He used to urinate out of his window anytime he felt like it. His house was a complete mess. He would yell, and he was very grouchy all the time, and people couldn't get along with him. Interestingly, he became deaf towards the end of his life, couldn't hear anything, and at that time composed what's considered a very great piece of music. Mendelssohn, for example, was a Jewish composer, and he was hated by another composer of his time named Wagner, who was, Wagner was sort of a pre-Nazi. He hated Jews, and therefore he hated Mendelssohn, and he was so arrogant, he felt that he was just God's gift to the world because he knew how to write opera. His operas would go on for hours and hours and hours. Schumann, also another great composer, he lost his mind completely and ended up in an insane asylum. And of course there was Schoenberg, who is a 20th century composer. He was so arrogant that he told the world that he had just created a new system of musical notation and composition to ensure German superiority in music for the next century. Ironically, he was thrown out of Germany because he was a Jew, and he was thrown out by the Nazis. So we find that all these great people in music actually had very strange lifestyles, often involving self-destructive behavior. I want to emphasize also that in the East, perhaps you have music may be looked upon as something that, you know, maybe a silly person does. But in the West, it is taken with extreme seriousness. I remember when I was in music school, we found people, they practiced all the time. All the time. Just constantly practicing, trying to make their art perfect. And the music just simply becomes an end unto itself. So if we look at the profession of music, we find that it's usually associated with things like, as I mentioned, alcohol and drugs. It's often associated with mixed dancing, meaning dancing between men and women. It's often associated with religion. And of course, there's not music in the Islamic tradition as far as worship goes, if we ignore some Sufi things. Therefore, it's usually Christian. And also parlor music, in which people like to sit around and have a little drink and pretend that they're very sophisticated while they listen to a musician. So we find that this sort of profession in itself is very, very, very questionable for someone who's a Muslim. A Muslim is someone who's supposed to stay away from drugs, stay away from alcohol, stay away from self-destructive behavior in general. So we find that before we've even looked at any hadith or anything from the sunnah, we find that the lifestyle of the musician is very, very, very questionable indeed. Oftentimes in song, when people sing, we find that some of the biggest topics for song are often un-Islamic things as well. When people sing, they often sing about romantic love, or premarital sex, or dancing, or rebellion against society, youth culture, and even suicide, and even worship of other gods and this sort of thing. An extreme example in the West might be this heavy metal music, which often includes satanic songs and groups. One in particular is called Merciful Fate. This is the name of a band from Scandinavia. And they were Satanists. They just came out and said, yes, we worship Satan. Satan is the one that we love. And one song is quoted, it ends with a statement, "My sweet Satan," meaning Shaitan. "My sweet Satan, you are the one." And they openly worship Satan. In my area, in New York, there was one young man about 13 who was murdered in a satanic ritual involving this kind of music. His eyes were gouged out of his head before he was murdered. There have also been several suicides associated with this kind of music. Two suicides in particular also happened in the Midwest in the United States. Two young men were listening to a Judas Priest album. That's the name of one of these groups. And they just became so high with the music that they just decided that they should kill themselves. And they took their shotguns. People in the country often have shotguns. And they went out of the house, and the first one took it, shot himself in the head, and killed himself on the spot. Now the second young man, he felt maybe he shouldn't do it. But now he felt committed because his son, his friend had just killed himself. So he thought that he'd better do it too. And he started reciting what he had heard, or what he thought he heard in the music. Do it, do it, do it, and he shot himself. We know the story because he survived for a short time. And his family came and he told them that they had listened to the music and they felt inspired to kill themselves for that. In the same area, there was another young man listening to heavy metal music who decided to kill himself. He shot himself in the head with a shotgun, but was unsuccessful with his suicide. And now is very deformed and disfigured. The first case that I mentioned was so shocking to people that they decided to try to legislate heavy metal music, and music in general, to try to get people to say, well, look, maybe we shouldn't listen to this music. Something's wrong here. And they petitioned the government, they went to the Capitol, and they said, look, we've got to regulate music. We've got to put warning labels on these records, on these CDs, to warn people about the music. This music might cause something bad to happen. Of course, in the United States, we have, you know, these different freedoms, so none of these laws have ever gone through. But there was a very strong and active movement to try to get not only some music banned, but also to try to warn people about this music. Another example is one group, it was a rap group, and they used to sing about sex all the time, even rape and abuse of women. And people tried to get them arrested also. In fact, they were arrested, and they tried to ban the music. But again, because of certain freedoms, mentioned in the laws of the United States, everything was thrown out, and they were allowed to continue their music. Of course, this controversy always generates much more interest than should actually be there about this music. As soon as something becomes controversial, everybody says, hey, we want to buy the record that caused somebody to shoot themselves. We want to buy the record that caused somebody to rape somebody. And they immediately try to listen to it more and more. And so the problem grows. So, of course, we can easily agree that as Muslims, any music that calls someone to something that is un-Islamic must be completely and totally avoided. So any song having to do with doing something with haram, a drinking song, for example, absolutely must be completely avoided. Something asking you to dance with this beautiful girl, not permissible in Islam. Now, one could also easily argue that, well, if we have some music that doesn't have any words in it, maybe that would be allowed. Because there's nobody singing or telling you to do anything. It's just music, and I could sit down and relax and listen to the music. So at this point, we should turn to the Islamic literature and try to see what is actually said about music. Again, I want to mention that I'm not a scholar, but I can convey some things that are in our literature, inshallah. There are some Quranic verses dealing with what some say is music, which we recited at the very beginning. Some people say that this vain talk applies to music. Others disagree, but there is that opinion. We also find in the hadith literature, though, authentic hadith dealing with music. This one hadith